Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. I hope wherever you are, the weather is just absolutely magnificently beautiful. I know here in the Pacific Northwest, we have got golden sunshine, and believe you me, we are ready for it. We have had so much of the wet golden sunshine that we're really ready for the real thing. My guest today is a man who has walked a path in life I don't think any of us would volunteer for. Why do I say that? My guest is Mr. Rob Pennington. He has been shot, fired from a job, audited by the IRS, and had a critically ill spouse that he took care of lovingly. However, from all of these experiences, he decided he was going to put into a book form the reality of understanding that no matter what life throws at you, you can come back stronger and better than you ever thought possible. I want to welcome to the airwaves Dr. Rob Pennington. His book is called Find the Upside of the Down Times. Dr. Pennington, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you so much for having me and for the opportunity to share the struggles that you highlighted that I've lived through and some of the lessons I learned, and hopefully can save some people time and avoid some pain that I went through.
Well, I think that is what wisdom is all about. If we have the capacity to recognize that life is an opportunity to expand us in so many ways, regardless of what we might be going through, wow, we're always going to be able to share that light of understanding with others, and that's exactly what you do. Your book has won a number of awards, but your background, you have you decided you wanted to go and reach people in a special way. Tell us a little bit about your professional background and give us the inside track on this episode of being shot. My goodness,
yes.
Nobody wants to have that experience.
Well, I'm a psychologist. I was in private practice for 30 years, mainly doing marriage counseling and working with people who had depression. I've also been married for 30 years, and my wife had multiple sclerosis, and that was something we knew a year and a half before we got married. And so that was a part of that experience. I've been a professional speaker, is how I market the counseling. I have been trainer for corporations. In fact, I'm proud that I received the highest trainer evaluations from ExxonMobil each year for 29 years.
Wow.
Mainly teaching a course called Successfully Managing the Stress of Change, and another one on successful work relationships. And so my experience over a long period of time is try to be practical with simple tools that make a powerful impact every day. And my book is really about dealing with the graduate school lessons in life. And when you're not able to deal with the elementary school lessons, like being in traffic or having the grocery store line or having your computer crash, that you're going to have a lot of difficulty when the graduate school lessons come, which I think for all of us, they do. So In my book, I talk about one of the lessons you described had to do with having gotten shot. Was a few blocks from my house. I was just walking home from the drugstore about dusk, and the street lights were coming on, and a car slowed down and stopped, and the driver got out. I thought he was going to ask directions. That happens often around here in Houston. People get lost or not knowing where they're going, new to the town. But he walked over and grabbed me and told me to get in his car, and two other men jumped out of the car. This is called a stressful moment.
No kidding.
It's amazing what your mind goes through, because when I was a kid, I grew up in a neighborhood with a bunch of boys who were older than I was, and I used to get beat up all the time and had to sneak home from school some so they wouldn't beat me up. And one of the first things that hit my mind was, wow, this hadn't happened in a long time. This used to happen every day.
It's amazing.
Now, I don't think I knew what was happening really. I just kind of pulled back out of his reach. He reached behind his back and pulled out a gun. And I think sometimes your mind protects you from the worst, because I didn't imagine getting shot at that moment. I thought, well, he's going to rob me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been practicing dealing with my fears about not having enough money, which is a condition for someone who's self-employed, always worrying about where we're going to get money because we're permanently unemployed.
Right.
And so I have been practicing feeling grateful for the money I have and grateful for the money I'm going to have. And when I thought that he wanted to rob me, my next thought would be, that's okay, I'll give him the money I want, and I'll make more. And I went through this little movie in my mind about what I'm going to say and what he's going to say, and I'm going to say, what do you want? He's going to say, give me your wallet, and I'm going to give him the wallet, and that's about as far as I got in my little movie. So I said, what do you want? And he just smiled and shot me, which I didn't expect.
And yeah, that's the last thing anybody would expect.
Yeah.
Hi, what do you want? I'm willing to give you this, and you bang, you're part of an initiation.
Yeah. Well, that's what the police felt, that it was a gang initiation, that if I got in the car, I definitely would have been dead, that probably he'd never shot anyone before, because when he shot me, a number of miracles happened. The first one was that the bullet was a dead-on shot. It hit me right in the center of my chest, and it stuck in the sternum. It did not go in my body. And I think it kind of stunned him, because it also grabbed my shirt and spun the material around the bullet and created wadding, and I didn't bleed at all. I mean, not a drop.
Amazing.
And it didn't knock me down, and I think it kind of scared him, because they turned and ran back to the car, and I turned and looked at the first house with a light on and walked towards it. I mean, I knew I'd been shot, but I don't think I really realized it, because no blood or anything, and I thought maybe it was a dart, you know, again, downplaying the reality of it. I went to the first house. I remember the sprinkler system was on as I walked up to the front door and knocked on the door, and the man who opened the door was wearing operating clothes, which I thought was a good sign. That was very encouraging. And he was a heart surgeon. And I found later he was one of the best heart surgeons in Houston. And it's just amazing that, you know, even in the most traumatic moment, some miraculous things can happen. Because
right.
I said, you know, he opened the door and I said, I think I've been shot. And he said, come in.
Mm-hmm.
And he called the police, he called the ambulance, he called my family. And it was just quite a remarkable experience.
You know, when I read your story, I thought, this is just absolutely incredible. It's something that maybe you'd expect to see on CSI or Bones or something like this. And here you are going through this experience, but that wasn't the end of it. That was just the beginning. But that in of itself, all of those variables that you mentioned, how many people have, you know, that is just that's an incredible story, because of what happened with the bullet, what the
all
fact
that
your shirt, you know, just the momentum of the bullet, you know, all of these things, and then walking up to the house of a heart surgeon. I mean, what are the odds of that? And you remember
the
sprinklers
itself,
going on.
Amazing. Oh yes. Yeah. But there are two more powerful things: one that's in the book and one that isn't in the book, that make a difference for me. I did recognize that this was a powerful story as it was happening. I remember being in the ambulance. You know, I'm a professional speaker. The best stories I can have are my own. And I remember thinking, wow, this is a great story. I'm taking notes. And here, you know, many years later, and it's the first chapter of my book, and we're talking about it, it is a dramatic story. But I was able to take that and see the opportunity that's really helped my speaking career enormously, to see that connection and opportunity. But more than that, my dad was there at the hospital immediately when I arrived, and he was with me for many days there in the hospital. And rest of my family was out of town, and he was really the support that I had through it. And my dad was a World War II hero. He received a Silver Star for gallantry in the line of action. And he, unbeknownst to me, I guess honored me by giving me his Silver Star attached to a plaque that said, presented for gallantry in the line of living.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
This silver star is for absorbing a large part of the inhumanity of the world in a very gallant manner. So I'm reading it here. He said, expect a miracle. When one does come, it may not be what you expected, but it is very welcome nonetheless. And he lists the witnesses, the nurses, the doctors, himself, and just describes the situation that happened. And I have that hanging in my living room.
Wow.
And it really
what
was
a
powerful,
legacy.
It was really a powerful healing in my relationship with my dad, because I think I always had some doubts about, you know, whether he was proud of me. I think that's a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that really, you know, kind of put that star into my heart in an important way. And so that was another opportunity that happened. And we just need to be open to these possibilities. You know, we all have heard the cliche, when a door closes, a window opens.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to make a change. Sometimes you have to turn around to see that window. Sometimes you have to just be open to the possibility that opportunities are going to occur, even if you don't know exactly how at the moment. And in each chapter of my book, where I describe some difficult circumstance and the lesson I learned, I also give an activity for someone to practice so that they could begin moving in the direction that made such a difference for me. And in the first chapter, what I ask people to do is just look at all the times when they're forced to stop and wait during the day, all the pauses that most people use to get upset.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the stoplight mm-hmm. doesn't care how upset we are. It's going to be red as long as it's red.
That is absolutely true. Now, one of the things that you cover in your book, and what I liked about your book, is the warmth. I really liked the way that you write your story, and it's not a big book. It is, however, a very powerful book.
Thank
because you share your wisdoms, as you say, as a PhD graduate of life experience, and the story about your father and the Silver Star is just amazing, because your dad recognized that to be a survivor, to be able to go through things, having been in a war and on the battlefield, he saw this happen many times, and a lot of people, a lot of his comrades died in World War II. So you've been given a profound legacy of wisdom, which you very generously are passing on to others. Let's talk about down-to-earth reality dealing with money. You made a comment about when one is an entrepreneur, you're always concerned. There's, oh my goodness, how are we going to pay the bills? Because there's no guarantee. That's
yes,
what
true.
An entrepreneur is involved with every single day of their life. And I can totally empathize with that because I'm one myself. So I think that this chapter where you talk about turning a worry into a goal, you have a very profound experience. Of course, you come out of the hospital. You didn't have insurance to cover your bills. You had $36,000 that was going to be charged to you. And you were just going, how do I handle this? And you did something that I think is absolutely wonderful. You spoke your word. You asked for help. Tell us how you did that and what was the result of your letting people know what you needed and how you were able to get some help.
Well, to get to where I even knew I could ask for help, I went through some changes first because I was overwhelmed by the bill. Obviously, I didn't have it. And if I did have the money, I wouldn't want to give it to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized my emotional resistance to that. So I kind of made a little game in my mind that actually I needed to come up with twice that amount so I could have some and then I'd give it to the hospital. That just was a little trick in my mind that I reset the goal, and that made it easier for me to imagine paying the bill even if I had the money. But then I realized I had a limitation in my thinking, and that was that I actually had to pay the bill. But the truth is, the hospital doesn't care whether or not the bill's paid by me or by someone else. If someone else comes up with the money and hands it to them, they're not going to go, wait a minute, did Rob earn that money?
Mm-hmm.
They just want it paid. And in that possibility, I became curious. How is that possible? I don't know how that could happen. And that's another thing I've learned, is that a lot of times we shut down on opportunities because we don't see exactly how something could happen. You know, the difference between thinking I can and thinking that I can't is whether or not I know how. And I've realized I don't have to know how to believe something's possible. I can begin the process of asking for help, getting other people's insights, and learning what I haven't known. So I started talking about this, and I started saying, I think it's possible maybe this could get paid in some way I'm unaware of. Maybe there's some foundation. Maybe there's some. And in one of my classes, when I was talking about this, someone raised their hand and said, there is. And I didn't know. And what it was something called the Crime Victims Compensation Board. And I learned that this exists in every state in the United States. They have their own government agency that basically takes money from criminals and puts it in a pool. And if you are a victim of a violent crime, you can apply for it. And until I was asking for help, I didn't even know that that was a possibility. So that came to my attention. I pursued it. I applied, and they paid all of the hospital bill, plus the $250 a month I had been paying on the bill.
Oh, my goodness.
And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't considered the possibility and asked for help, asked for, you know, opening that door. And I think that's a critical one. I talk about it later in the book, dealing with my wife's illness and the importance of asking for help. Because I think sometimes life gets overwhelming, and we need to do that. And yet a lot of us are afraid of asking for help.
Yes.
We're not afraid of giving help. So I have a little activity where I ask people to imagine their friends, how happy you would be to help them. Happy that they asked. Happy that they let you know, and happy to do what you could.
You have...
Towards you.
Absolutely true. Now, you have the chapter on failure. And this had to do with graduate school. Failure is something I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to escape from. It's there to be
absolutely
a teacher. It's there.
It's
not an enemy. It is not, really, it is not an enemy. But if we look at it as an enemy, then we're going to get caught up in a cycle that takes us downward. And if we can sort of lift ourselves up, brush ourselves off, as the old song says, and start all over again, we're okay. But so many people get stuck in certain issues, whether it might have been a loss of money, or something happens in the family, or they shoulda, woulda, coulda. With you, it related to education. Tell us how you perceived something being a failure and how you were able to go past that to surpass what you didn't think you could.
Well, first, it is a normal challenge I think everybody has. And like you said, you have to start over. And there's, I think, a fear of starting over, meaning it's going to be just as hard the next time. But really, we start over with information we didn't have the first time. Henry Ford said, failure is simply another opportunity to begin again, this time more intelligently. So we always do learn something from the failure that could help us in a new way. For instance, the failure you're talking about in the book is I was unable to pass a language, which is a requirement to get a degree. You have to have a language requirement met. And I was having difficulty. I tried tutoring. I tried different languages. I could read it. I just couldn't converse in it. I just couldn't think fast enough to translate it well enough, and I wasn't able to pass languages. And I was really quite upset at that because that meant I wasn't going to graduate. And I couldn't see any way around it. And in talking to a friend, he kind of challenged me. He was talking about maybe that the what I thought was impossible was actually possible. And for me, that didn't make any sense. Well, you know, I kind of blew him off for a while. But he was very persistent. I'm very grateful to him. He was basically saying it's possible to have a requirement waived, to actually have the school change its mind.
Amazing.
And I didn't know that was a possibility. And he was really encouraging, and I was I guess at some point got through some of my stubbornness to hear that he might know more than I did. And I went and found out that that was in fact the case, that I needed to get references. I got a letter from a tutor saying he'd done all he could.
Mm-hmm.
I'd gotten a letter from a former dean of students who was an advisor to a service organization I was in, Alpha Phi Omega, and he wrote that, you know, that I was a good guy, wasn't trying to sneak out on anything. I got a letter from a graduate faculty member in the psych department I wanted to go into saying further efforts on a language would be detrimental to my professional career.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think, and this is another principle in the book, and that is that persist until you succeed because chance favors the prepared. When I prepared this request for a waiver, I happened to meet with the dean of students, the dean of the school, College of Education, the last week he was there. He was on his way to become president of Boston University. And he was in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking at it and noticed that I had taken computers. And he said, well, you know, computers is kind of like a language to me. So use that. So he let me use my computer hours to meet the language requirement. And then he said, well, go take any hours you want to take to fill up the hours for the degree. And fortunately, the graduate department I wanted to go into in this particular university had courses that were available to undergraduates. They're graduate courses, but undergraduates could attend them. They're called vestibule courses. And I took 15 hours of that in educational psychology. Now, the benefit of that, I didn't realize at the moment, was I got to be known by the graduate faculty.
Fascinating.
And that really was a profound thing in helping me get into the department, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So if I hadn't had difficulty with that language, I would not have gotten the opportunity to take those 15 hours in the graduate department, because psychology is as competitive, if not more so, than medical school. And they've got piles of applications from students all over the country. And the fact that I had gotten to know them, I think, made a difference.
Life, to me, is just absolutely a fascinating panorama of variables. And we just never know how we are going to, let's say, put in our request for one thing, and the universe sends us along and says, okay, you wanted purple, you're going to end up with puce green. Take it or leave it, kid. This is what you got. You had puce green more than once.
That's true.
You ended up making it into sparkling pink, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
now,
I'm very grateful for that.
Yes. I want to mention something, because I know we have so many people that are struggling today. They look at the newscast. Some people watch the news for hours, or they've got their ears plugged in to the latest reports, and they get to a point where they say, why bother? Why should I even be concerned with trying to go ahead? Everything's going down the toilet. But you don't, you really have a very good attitude about life. You believe in being a participant. Just don't exist. Be a participant.
Absolutely, because the point of view that you're describing is based on statistics. And
mm-hmm.
what I know about statistics is they only apply to a group. They don't apply to the individual.
And they
so
can
really
also be manipulated.
It doesn't really make a difference what's happening for other people, what I do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people confuse what's happening for others with what the opportunities are for me. And I think I'm more in charge of what opportunities I create and what ones I take advantage of. And
yes.
It takes some practice. I mean, you know, the difference between a success and a failure may only be that the success tried one more time.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes
that's
you're
true.
Describing that we worry about something not happening, so we give up. But if you think about a worry by definition being something you do not want to have happen, you're worrying about this thing you do not want to have happen, the opposite of it by definition is something you do want to have happen. It's called a goal. So the opposite of every worry is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn how to flip that quicker and then actually take actions towards the goal. And again,
mm-hmm.
chance favors the prepared. So it doesn't guarantee results. It just makes them more likely than it would happen otherwise.
Your book has so many wonderful stories. And when someone goes through it, you can tell you wrote this from the heart. But you also incorporated your own practical understanding. And I think that many times that practical application of wisdom is so important, because without it, we just flap along like a halibut that's been taken out of water, and we just aren't going to get anywhere. So
true,
we need
and I think
to
a lot
realize
of times people just get inspired with some motivational, you can kind of attitude, and that's good, but it's missing the steps. It's
mm-hmm.
missing what to do when you're discouraged, what to do when you're worried. And that's what I have spent 30 years learning that's made a difference for me. And I didn't want to come out with a book that was just another rah-rah kind of book. So I'm talking about the times when I felt overwhelmed, when I was struggling, when I had difficulties, but where I also used a specific tool or technique that made a difference for me.
Mm-hmm. You have a very loving story about your wife, Claire, and the two of you actually grew together in a, I think, a very special way. And too often in today's world, there is such a romanticization that is, in my view, made about marriage, about relationships. It's all like it's supposed to be a Hollywood movie of some kind. Well, it can be, you know, a Stephen King special, or you can have a Walt Disney run if you want, or if you're happy or you want something in between that's going to be more satisfying. There's no such thing as an, in my personal observation, I've been a counselor for a lot of years, there's no such thing as an absolutely perfect relationship. But the one that seems to be the richest is when two people are willing to grow and they respect each other's identities, passions, and interests, but you realize that you have, each of you, something to give and something to learn. And that is something that in your book you express so very well with your wife.
Thank you.
There's so many things that she struggled with because she had MS, her anger, you struggling with a lot of things growing into yourself. And I think that, again, your book is very warm, very real. It expresses the variables of life that enable people to understand, yes, they do have choice. And I think that's one of the best gifts that your book gives. Now, Dr. Pennington, your book is Find the Upside of the Down Times, How to Turn Your Worst Experiences into Your Best Opportunities. And for those of you that are listening, you know about it. I mean, getting shot in the chest by a perfect stranger that's out trying to do an initiation. Whoopee, yeah. He didn't stand on a quarter saying, hello, universe, I'd really like to have this experience. This would be very nice. No, this isn't something. Life happens sometimes. But more than that, it's what do you do with it? And his other stories about what he's gone through. Dr. Rob Pennington is a man that I think when you finish reading his book, you'll find that you'll be happy to participate in some of the exercises because you're living whatever experiences you're living. So go to his website, Dr. Rob Pennington, and that's Dr. Rob Pennington, PenningtonTon.com. And Dr. Pennington, do you have a thought you'd like to leave with my audience today before we close out our conversation?
Well, the book is available on Amazon, Kindle, and iTunes. But I think the thought I'd like to leave is that there's just one secret to success. It lies in the ability to get other people's point of view and see things from that person's angle, as well as your own. We can eliminate much conflict in our lives just by being more curious about why others think the way they do.
Well, I think that that is very true, very true. And it always, when we take that positioning, have the opportunity to change our paradigms if they need to be changed. Dr. Rob Pennington, I thank you for being my guest today, and I wish you well. His book is, again, Find the Upside of the Down Times, How to Turn Your Worst Experiences into Your Best Opportunities. Believe me, we all can benefit with that understanding. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't forget to check out drrobpennington.com. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And please do, if you so desire, give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at the toll-free number of 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to say that this weekend was quite a busy one. And I had the opportunity to be at a graduation ceremony, as I know so many of you may well be experiencing with members of your own family. And we were at the Key Arena, and there were thousands of people there. There were these graduates of master programs that for a particular university. And I was fascinated by how mature, when I say mature, I mean age, wise people were in the graduating class, and how many women were in the graduating class for masters and for doctorates. The diversity of cultural aspects was very, very visible. People from Asian, Middle Eastern, European, I mean, there was just all of this cultural diversity. And I looked at that and I thought, and I discussed this with someone after the ceremony was finished, even 20 years ago, you wouldn't have seen as many women participating in these ceremonies. 30 years ago, it would have been a very low percentage. Within a relatively short window of time, or I should say small window of time, there has been an awareness with the older generation that they want to go back to school. And our friend who was graduating is someone that is in his 40s, his late 40s, and he decided to go after his own education, his degree. And it took him 5 years. He had started off in college when he was in his 20s, but circumstances, well, college went out the window. And his whole family was so supportive of him dedicating 5 years of his life, his adult life, and he was working full-time to completing this degree. Now, what was so interesting to me, that in completing this degree, it is not just getting the degree. It is incorporating a level of self-esteem and an understanding that this is not just a milestone for him and for his family, because without support of the family and his friends, he honestly said he didn't know that he would have completed it, because it's a very, very intense discipline that you have to go through to do this. And 5 years of your life where everyone around you is, especially your family, is not going to have but just maybe a tiny piece of you because of your doing this later in your life. And I looked at the graduates that were walking the floor, and most of them were over the age of 30. And I thought, this is an incredible statement culturally, because people are becoming aware, male or female, that it's okay to go back to school. It is okay to expand yourself into a new dimension. It's okay to grow into a bigger part of yourself. Now, in part, our world has changed. We live in a time where people, when they get close to their 60s, where, gee whiz, they think, I'm not going to have to do anything, I can retire, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. But they find, when they get in their 60s, economically, they really cannot retire in the old-fashioned image of retirement. It just doesn't work. We have a whole different economic scenario. The job market has changed. I was having a discussion at a meeting on Saturday with a woman who is involved with a library. And she said she advises young people, be prepared. You're going to have to be of the entrepreneurial nature. The type of jobs that maybe your parents had or your grandparents had, where you'd work for a company for 30 or 40 years, just aren't going to be there. You must be adaptable and you must be flexible. And we were having this discussion on Saturday evening, and I thought, here we go. Here is a mature woman. She herself is in her 60s. She's very well educated, and she's training younger people, saying just because you get a degree does not automatically mean you're going to step out and find a job waiting for you, because there just is a whole different world out there than what you have expected. So I think my guest today has shared some very good things. Life happens. There's not this guarantee. When you hear a young person saying, I'm going to go out and change the world, they're not aware of the fact that they first have to change their world, their thinking. And education hopefully has initiated them into the beginning of that. But they're going to be meeting a lot of different life experiences that may totally give them an entirely different view of the world than they have, as they are expecting when they may be at a young age, when they're in their 20s, getting out of school. But that's the way it is with all of us. So many times, life presents changes and shifts that in a million years we would have never imagined. Many of them are brought in by outside circumstances. But if you look at this experience of life as being in a school, you're going to find that you'll have your kindergarten level, you'll have your, you know, beginner school level, you're going to have your elementary, you're going to go into junior high, and then you're going to have your high school, and then you're going to be in college, and if you're fortunate enough, you're going to graduate with life's experiences, with a PhD of experience that's not going to be measurable. And the key is, you need to pass it on. It's one of the things that my authors, by writing, by putting their books out, by creating music, a movie, however they design to leave information and their wisdom of experience, they are leaving a legacy. And for those of you that are listening, it's very important that you remember you have a legacy to leave too. And it's something that you really can find yourself enjoying in a very special way. And I was talking with a retired policeman yesterday, and his stories are just amazing, just absolutely incredible. And he had said that he had written a book, and he had it on a computer. And his concern was that a lot of the information he had, he also had gotten involved in genealogy, that so much of what he had put together, nobody would be interested in after he was gone. He said, it'll probably all dissipate. And I said to him, no, be sure you let your family know what you've done. And make sure it's on a memory stick or is someplace safe where people can retrieve it. Because I can guarantee you, your stories are definitely worth telling, and your family history is definitely worth knowing about. So maybe there's not immediate family members that you know of that might have an interest, but you never know about your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren or even your nieces and nephews that might find what you have to say valuable. So remember, you too have a legacy to leave. Your story is important, and if you can, share it with others, because it does make a difference. And if you are inclined to do so, write it out. If nothing else, maybe tell somebody else's story and they'll write it out for you. But it is important we share our knowledge and our understanding, because we never know the impact that it's going to have on another person's life. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. If you'd like to give me a buzz, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. I'll give you my mental impression. And then after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything you like. I wanted to share with you something about passwords. We, most of us, are involved, all of us, I know, that are listening to this show, are involved with computers. And we get concerned about getting hacked. And there are those people out there that just delight in doing it. They like to hack into systems. We hear about major systems in the government, the military, around the world that's been hacked. All of the big organizations like Google, Microsoft, and many, many more, they're constantly under this challenge. Why? Well, it's just a factor of life. You're always going to have people that are going to go and want to go against what you call the good guy rules and implement the bad guy rules. And it's their joy. Well, when it comes to making passwords uncrackable, I don't know that if you're really sophisticated in this, that that is the case, but people consistently work towards that. So if you have a different password for every one of your accounts and you use a variety of letters and numbers and symbols to keep people from knowing what you've done, make sure that there's a couple of points that you keep in mind. Don't make it one word. If you have like a name or something like the word baseball, apparently there are hacking systems that go through every single word in a dictionary for virtually any language, as well as names for men, women, and even pets. So they like to do this. So if you really want to have a password that nobody can crack, so to speak, you want to make sure that they're more than 5 characters long. They say if you have 10 characters in a password, it's going to take a long time for them to figure out what you've got. So you want to be aware that every character you add means the password guessing computer program has to go through millions more combinations to find the right one. They say on average the most secure password is about 16 characters long. That's the average password, the most secure that they know. And to have the safest password, now this surprised me. You know, I know of some people, when they put together a password, they have slashes, they have stars in it, they have all kinds of stuff. Said the harder your password is to remember, the more likely you are to keep a copy of it someplace easily accessible, where just about anybody can find it. And I know people that have files on their passwords. Good Lord, we have to have so many anymore. So if you put together 3 to 5 unrelated words, such as store, chair, and horse, capitalize the first letter of each, then add a number or symbol that's special to you, it looks like store, chair, horse, maybe your graduation year, 2012. It'll have all the safety while being easy for you to recall. My goodness, we all have to keep lists somewhere, don't we? How about you? Do you have about 20 or more passwords that you have to remember? Mm-hmm. Well, that's just the way it is. So those are some tips that I came across, and I thought I would share them with you today so that maybe you can keep your computer system a little bit more secure than you thought you could or were aware of the possibility of doing. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to take a break in a moment. I've got some stories to share with you, and if you'd like to chat with me, the number to call into is 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking with Joseph Higgins, and his book is titled, Hello? Anybody home? Actually, it's anyone home. It's referring to communication with people after they've passed. If you are interested in that, I think you're going to find this show really intriguing. Joseph Higgins is a medium and has extensive experience with this. And, of course, the subject is a controversial one, but a fascinating one as well. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll be sharing some things with you. Oh, and you might want to keep a pad of paper and a pen handy, because I have a scrumptious recipe that I'm going to be sharing. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, before we go into some of the stories that I wanted to share with you today, I wanted to continue with your 2012 summer horoscope. That's right. We're going to be talking about the signs of Scorpio and Libra this morning. This is just fun stuff. I like doing it. And it just gives you an idea, well, maybe about some things that are going to be coming up for you. For those of you born under the sign of Scorpio, you are going to sort of loosen up your worry self and relax about making it okay to go with the flow of the situations that are around you in your environment. And at the same time, you're really going to be investigating what it is that for you is so meaningful when it comes to success and money. You're going to find that you're going to be focusing very carefully and thoughtfully on how you want to work more effectively with money so it is going to be more fulfilling in more ways than one, not just in your bank account, but also how you can manage it and leverage it. So you are going to be looking at educating yourself a little bit, and you also are going to find that a particular dream of yours that you have sort of kept hidden away and you wanted to protect it because you didn't want it damaged, you're going to be allowing it to come to the surface. And this may be the year for you to explore the options of being able to achieve the dream that is so meaningful to you. For those of you born under the sign of Libra, this is a year to explore, especially this summer. Take advantage of time to really evaluate what you want most. Don't worry too much about personal relationships in the sense that if you're single, you're looking for that Mr. or Ms. Special. Understand that person will be in your space in the right time and the right place, but investigate and invest in those things that mean the most to you and that really, really have a significance as far as education goes and being able to help you reach what it is that you as an individual, not as part of a group, but as an individual, aspire to really see happen in your life. And when it comes to work, yes, you're going to be working hard. This is something that is just a part of you. You're going to want to do that. But you're also going to find that as your responsibilities grow, you're going to want to become more efficient in how you're working. You want to make sure that you manage your time effectively and well. And if you're wanting to change your job, do your homework, because the opportunity is going to be there available for you. And it may mean that you have to invest in a little bit of education for yourself, but check out your options. Don't close the door. And do you know what? You have got some wonderful social environments that are going to be coming your way. You're going to really find that your social nature is going to blossom in a way that you would never have imagined. So go for it. This summer, 2012, for Libra and Scorpio both, you've got a dynamic period. Take advantage of it and enjoy it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. All I need is your first name or initial. Telephone number to call in to is 888-673-7425. 888-627-6008. Looking at the wrong number. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story with you, and all of this is historically documented. Life is so fascinating. There's so many variables in it. On April 7th, 1938, there were three separate incidences of spontaneous human combustion that took place within a geometrically connected area. What were those happenings? Well, there was a very prosperous and prominent building contractor. His name was G.A. Shepherdson. He was in a boat. He was cruising around a construction site in Helsey, Yorkshire. He was waving to his crew of workmen as he went. And all of a sudden, he became a human torch. Now, I'm wrong. He wasn't in a boat. He was in a car. Excuse me. This is my mistake. Nothing else in the vehicle was burned. Just him. It's one of these spontaneous combustions. Now, a truck driver, whose name was George Turner, from Upton by Chester, was discovered combusted in his vehicle. His vehicle was overturned in a ditch. Nothing in his vehicle was burned. Not a thing. Also, on April 7th, 1938, John Greeley, who was the helmsman of the SS Ulrich, he was in the pilot house steering a ship west of Land's End when the ship began to yaw, and a second mate rushed to the pilot house and discovered the charred remains of Greeley. The room showed no indication of fire or heat. The polished floor, a shiny compass, and varnished wooden wheel, nothing. Absolutely nothing. There had been sailors passing by this boat. Saw nothing. Absolutely nothing. Also, on April 7th, 1938, in Holland, there was an 18-year-old young man, Wilhelm ten Broek, who was inside his car. Spontaneous combustion. The interior upholstery unaffected. How can this happen? You set anything on fire, it's going to leave residue. It's going to leave signs of burning. How can this happen where only the human bodies had spontaneous combustion and not anything that they were sitting on, touching, was burned? Fascinating story. They absolutely have no answer of any kind. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share with you the information on the guests coming up this week. We're going to not only have Joseph tomorrow, but on Wednesday we're going to be talking with David Koop. Cancer. It's a good thing I got it. You rarely hear about men getting breast cancer. David did. His story is just an amazing one. And it also says something about genetics relative to certain conditions, so I think you're not going to want to miss it. Lessons of the Lost, Scott Hammond. We're going to be talking about search and rescue, but also many things that Scott Hammond, who's been involved in this wonderful, wonderful area of volunteer work, he's going to share some very specific stories that I think you'll like, and then why bother? Peter Belegas. Peter is a man that really wants people to know that life is definitely worth living in a very, very special way. Now, if you want to know more about the guests that are going to be coming up, check us out here, because we always have a listing here on the radio station so that you'll know a little bit about the people. But you can also check out my newsletter, which I put out every month. You'll find a listing of the upcoming guests and scheduled appearances, etc. So I welcome you to go to DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find out more information. My goodness, we are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a delight having you. Tell your friends, because, of course, it's showtime. Well, it's 9 to 10, and that's Pacific time. And we're delighted to share our time with you and bring forth people that have stories to share to make your life a better experience. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. And just know, you have your own story. One day, maybe, you'll be able to share it here with me, Donna Sebo, on the show itself. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.